Welcome to today's episode of GRC and Me, where we dive into the evolving landscape of vendor risk management. I'm your host, Megan Manivel, and today I'm joined by Michael Rasmussen, GRC analyst and pundit at GRC 2020. Together, we'll break down the complex world of third, fourth, and fifth party risks, the essential regulations he sees in the financial sector, and best practices for building a robust vendor risk management program. Welcome, Michael. Let's go ahead and start with tell our listeners what is one thing about you that is not on your LinkedIn page that we should know?
I guess it's my passion for medieval history, which you can sort of see by the eclectic stuff around behind me. So I actually have a master's degree in medieval church history, and so love my travels to Europe and exploring medieval places, from castles to churches to so much more.
Wow. That's really cool. And you certainly have spent your fair share of time traveling around Europe and seeing all the churches, I'm sure, and the architecture there. So very cool. Now, in your travels, I'm sure that in among those things, you've also encountered quite some interesting myths and stories about GRC and about security. So we're going to start here with our Mythbusters section, and I'm going to go ahead and just ask you one that we hear a little bit, and I wanted to get your take on it, is that once a vendor is onboarded into your organization, the risk management process is complete, right? Everything's good to go and you can move on. Curious on your take, myth or fact?
Oh, complete myth. I mean, the onboarding process is just one stage of third-party risk management. You have the ongoing continuous assessment and monitoring, which also is that third-party risk intelligence and integration to the variety of content sources out there. But then you've got managing issues, audits, and inspections, and all that of the vendors and suppliers, and those can go downstream to even like facilities and measuring performance against specific contracts. And risks in specific contracts. And then you've got the offboarding process, which is mo the most often broke most broken process in third-party risk management, where when I do my third-party risk by design workshop around the world, one that it comes back to me time and time again is the number of attendees that really don't have any type of structured workflow and process for offboarding, saying goodbye to vendors and suppliers.
Yeah, very, very true. All right, well, how about this one? Myth or fact, smaller vendors pose less risk than larger ones?
For the smaller by that the vendor itself is a small vendor, or our use of a vendor is small.
Oh, I think this one is specific to vendors being small, like smaller companies.
I mean, to me, that'd be a myth. Now, obviously, larger vendors, there's a chance that we might have a much larger relationship with them and critical relationship, but even a small supplier or vendor might be providing a critical service and even could cause a significant exposure. I mean, you go back a decade ago to the Target breach, an HVAC vendor, the heating air conditioning vendor that had a connection to the Target network for environmental monitoring, was the weakness for one of the largest credit card breaches. A hacker broke into the heating and air conditioning vendor and was able to get onto the Target network. Now, was that a big, large, critical supplier of Target? I couldn't tell the scale, but it's probably not one of the what you'd say is the most significant. It was an oversight. Then there was the casino that had a Internet of Things device that was managed in a fish tank to like a thermometer that was broken into that had a for a data breach within a casino.
Yeah,
Those little
yeah,
things matter. It's like
yeah.
chaos there. The flutter of the butterfly's wings in the Netherlands makes tiny atmospheric changes that can influence the development path of a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico. For all we
Yeah.
know, the devastating Hurricane Helene might have started with the flutter of a butterfly's wings in Netherlands or somewhere else. I'm not trying to make light of that horrible situation, but just use that as an analogy. But those little things matter, and those little things can stem from large vendors and suppliers, but also to those small ones that do things for us.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think really honing in on the relationship, right? What do they do for you? What's the impact? I actually hadn't heard about the thermometer one. That's very interesting and really makes you think about when you're connecting things to the internet. You know, my fridge is connected to the internet, and you know, who knows what could happen, if somebody wanted to attack us here. So, well, awesome. So let's move on to our rapid fire Q&A. So I'm just gonna throw some questions at you. Love to hear your take on this as we move forward. So obviously focusing on third-party risk and your vendors. So we get asked a lot, what regulations or standards should risk management teams be aware of when it comes to things like vendor risk management, whether it's in, the enterprise or maybe financial or banking industries or across there, what are vendor risk regulations look like, and what do people need to be aware of?
Well, in North America and Europe, there's several recent regulations and standards that are central to third-party risk, vendor risk management. And so some of the key themes are operational resilience, ESG, and cybersecurity. The big theme right now is the EU DORA and also UK Operational Resilience Act, or if you're down in Australia, CPS 230. But there's a lot of focus on operational resilience, and you cannot be resilient without looking at your third parties. And that's a key pillar of DORA. And in DORA, which will take full effect in early 2025, just a few months away, and it seems like every day I'm answering questions on DORA, establishes strict guidelines for financial institutions and their information communication technology providers. So all those third parties out there require them to meet specific operational resilience and cybersecurity standards. This regulation and really has a substantial impact on third-party risk management, as critical vendors are subject to direct supervision by EU regulators. But I mean, that's DORA for operational resilience. You look at the UK operational resilience with the FCA, Bank of England, and PRA. And there's a variety of things that intersect with this, like UK SMCR, Senior Managers Regime Certification Regime, where you have to have a senior management function that's ultimately accountable for different areas of risk, including third-party risk. And one UK bank had a huge operational resilience failure with because of a third party, and the bank was fined £40 million last year. The CIO, the Chief Information Officer, being the senior management function, was personally fined £80,000 because of this operational resilience failure with this third-party vendor. The CIO had to pay out of his bank account, not the bank's bank account. Personal liability in the UK. So operational resilience is a huge theme. We also see it from I mentioned the UK operational resilience, the EU DORA, CPS 230, but you have guidance as well. We have guidance in the US with the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, on operational resilience. It's not regulation yet, although they've said that it will become regulation. But we do have guidance and on that. And of course, you have the guidance from the Basel and the Bank for International Settlements on operational resilience. That's just one aspect. The other aspect that is very strong across the pond over in Europe is ESG and supply chain regulations, whether it's Germany's LSG to now the EU CSRD, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. And with that, the corresponding and very critical Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive requires ongoing continuous due diligence across your third-party relationships. These recent ESG regulations, such as the CSRD and CSDDD, have a significant impact on third-party risk management. Banks and financial services firms need to ensure that their vendors adhere to ESG requirements, particularly around environmental risks and human rights compliance. In the US, some big things to consider is the NIST cybersecurity framework, in which financial institutions often align their vendor risk programs within this cybersecurity framework. And the most recent update, has particular controls around third-party risks. And, going back just a few years ago, during COVID, October 2020, so just 4 years ago this month, you have the OCC bulletin on third-party relationships, where the OCC's updated guidelines stress the importance of understanding the risks posed by third-party relationships, especially in areas like cybersecurity, business continuity, and data privacy. But besides these regulations, you have all the events and things like that. And we can just look at things from whether it was SolarWinds to the CrowdStrike incident from a few months ago, and significant issues in the third-party relationships in that aspect.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ever expanding, right? When you think about even just a couple of years ago, 5, 10 years ago, when we talked about third party risk due diligence, it was, maybe some questionnaires or like you mentioned at onboarding and things like that. And now it was sort of part of a standard, right? There might be a domain or a subsection, and now there's a significantly more emphasis on it. Globally, as you just noted there. So, and that's really kind of leading into our next question here is with everything changing so rapidly and new regulations coming out and such, what can folks do to really stay educated about some of those standards and regulations and what are the best practices when it comes to maintaining, vendor risk in your organization?
Certainly, given the rapid pace of regulatory change we see with DORA, GDPR enforcements and updates, cybersecurity directives, there's a lot to keep track of. And one thing to look at that can help is, the different types of RegTech solutions, with RegTech standing for regulatory technology. You've got a lot of, third-party intelligence providers out there that offer advanced regulatory change management solutions or third-party risk intelligence that automate the tracking of regulations or risk issues, whether it's politically exposed persons, watch lists, sanction lists, negative news, reputation and brand. So I'm covering quite a spectrum from regulatory change to third-party risk intelligence, but they can really help integrate with solutions like LogicGate to be able to provide information into those systems to keep you updated. Of course, there's membership in different industry groups. You can participate in working groups from things such as the Financial Services Information Sharing and Analysis Center, the FSISAC, or other industry associations that provide early insights into evolving regulations and best practices. These groups often work directly with regulators to interpret upcoming rules and standards. I also highly recommend cross-industry collaboration, where you learn from peers in other industries and how they're approaching things. And because I think there's a lot that we can learn from each other, because we sort of become stale when we just sort of look at it from the same lens we've been doing for the last 20, 30 years that us and our peers have been doing, and while other industries might be advancing more. So those are just some ideas that come to mind.
Yeah, I love that too about, that cross kind of industry and looking around and see what else is out there. It really gives you that holistic view, because things are changing, and who would think of some of the stuff that we've seen in the last year? 5 years ago were unimaginable. And it's interesting. You gave a couple of really great examples earlier. Target, I think Home Depot was another one where I believe it was a third party. Obviously, the casinos you just mentioned, and so continuity and resilience being big, for most companies. But are there any kind of actionable steps or things that you would recommend that organizations do that they can increase some of that resilience? You talked a lot about the necessity of it. What kind of the best practices, if you will, out there for that?
Oh, certainly. I mean, third parties do play a critical role in key operations of financial services firms. I mean, and you walk down the halls of many financial services firms, and half the people you walk by are not employees, but they're vendors and contractors and outsourcers and service providers. And they've got, I mean, there's a lot of outsourcing. And so the financial services firms are heavily reliant on third parties. And so you need to pay close attention to the operational resilience regulations that I mentioned. And so that's a critical aspect. Those regulations like DORA and the UK's operational resilience and so forth, they mandate financial institutions to have a clear understanding of their critical third-party service providers and potential impact, and should also look at concentration risk, where you have increasing dependence on a small number of cloud service providers like AWS, Azure, or Google Cloud has introduced significant concentration risks. It's been a focal point of recent discussions among EU regulators, leading to enhanced scrutiny of cloud providers under EU DORA. To increase resilience, financial institutions can, getting right to your question, Megan, map critical services, identify where the financial services firm should identify the most critical services provided by third parties and assess the potential impact of their failure. This should include supply chain dependencies and upstream risks. Within the UK operational resilience, it also defines about impact tolerances and what's acceptable thresholds there. You should take a close look at contractual requirements for resilience, where you can strengthen contracts with vendors to include detailed business continuity and recovery requirements to be considered, as well as regular testing. As part of resilience planning, financial institutions should regularly test continuity plans, recovery plans with key vendors, including tabletop exercises and failover testing for cloud services.
Oh, really great advice. And I like that you brought in some of the non-technical pieces of it too, the contracts. That's a really key one, reviewing those things. I think it's interesting when we talk about sort of you mentioned concentration risk. And if we go back, several years, I remember it was all about redundancy and diversification, right? So it was first we don't want to have a single one. We got to diversify. We got to have this. But now it's okay. Now did we diversify too much? We have too many vendors. Where's that balance, right? Of making sure you can maintain it, but also have that resiliency there. So really, really great points there, Michael. And that kind of leads to if we're thinking about the resilience side, but then also, what are some of the challenges then with just it risks in general coming in from them? How do you manage, tracking those? Some folks have it as maybe a separate function, maybe it's vulnerability management, things like that. What advice do you have for banks and other organizations to really develop and mature their third-party risk program?
Well, a couple of different aspects. One is manage the regulatory overload. With all the regulations like DORA and GDPR and sector-specific cybersecurity rules, and as well as enforcement actions and personal and accountability that's growing in this area, financial institutions are really overwhelmed by the volume of requirements, and that makes regulatory compliance a complex and resource-intensive task that requires us to stay on top of not only the here and now regulations, but what's developing in the short term, but the horizon scanning, what's coming at us 1 year from 1 year from now or 2 years from now, what's to be expected so we can prepare for that and build for that. Because if we're building everything for now, by the time 2 years comes, the regulatory landscape's changed and evolved. So we need that continuous horizon scanning of what do we expect the enforcement and the regulations to be, not just now, but in the future. Another one is to look at that vendor concentration risks. As I noted earlier, financial institutions are increasingly reliant on a small number of technology and cloud providers, which has introduced systemic risks. But then also another consideration is the dynamic risk environment. The digital landscape is constantly evolving to new technologies like artificial intelligence being integrated into financial services. This introduces unknown risks, particularly when vendors rely on emerging technology and use it to deliver services for financial services firms. That dynamic risk environment, another one is that integrated risk environment. I was teaching my third-party risk by management by design workshop at LogicGate's conference last spring. I think it was March or April. I can't remember what month it was. I had several, firms around the world in the room. And I shared this micro simulation where, in the first part of it, there's a little video that you just got hit with a major modern slavery issue with one of your critical suppliers, and out of the of one Asian country. What do you do about it? And then they all break down their workshop and activities, and then we hit the next micro simulation. It's like, because of this modern slavery issue, you now have just been hacked by the hacktivist group Anonymous, and your systems are being held with at ransom until you break ties with this critical supplier that you're so dependent on. Now, what do you do? And you, yes, this is fictitious, but there was a firm that is in the financial services support space, and they said this happened to us.
Oh,
Yeah,
wow.
and so, but for them, it wasn't a modern slavery issue; it was the war in Ukraine, and they had operations in Russia, and so they were hacked by the hacktivist group, and their systems were held at ransom until they broke ties with their third-party relationships in Russia.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, so many real world scenarios that you just don't think of when you set up that basic third party risk management. And so really, like you mentioned, maturing and growing and staying on top of some of those things, iterating on it as you grow. So,
And to
yeah.
address that, financial services firms looking to mature their third-party risk program should invest in integrated GRC systems, like a LogicGate, and leverage those systems to provide a consolidated view of all vendor risks and automate workflows for risk assessments, monitoring, and due diligence. That's absolutely essential for scalability of a program. You need to develop a risk-based approach where financial services firms should adopt a risk-based approach that focuses on the most critical vendors and areas of risk, such as cybersecurity or resilience, to ensure that resources are allocated to where the risk exposure is the greatest, and that continuous ongoing monitoring, where we were monitoring the vendors and suppliers continuously, It's not just a one-time assessment. Financial services firms need to engage in continuous monitoring using tools, and which really can be third-party risk intelligence feeds into LogicGate that track, vendor risk information. So some other thoughts.
Yeah. No, I love that. Very, very cool. Very cool. And it's just such a growing space that, it's tomorrow it's going to be different. Tomorrow, the next day it's going to be different there. Which brings me to our last question here is looking ahead, looking at 2025. What do you see or how do you see some of the regulatory changes that we're anticipating and of course just the changing dynamic of the industry? How do you see that influencing, vendor risk management strategies for financial services in the future?
Well, the next few years is going to bring a significant amount of regulatory change, and not just the regulations themselves, but the enforcement actions, as well as just general legal liability around areas of resilience, cybersecurity, and the accountability, the third-party accountability. We should expect direct supervision of critical third parties, where regulations like DORA will introduce direct oversight of critical third-party providers in the financial services sector. Especially those providing cloud services. That means that these vendors will be held to the same regulatory standards as the financial institutions themselves, fundamentally changing the dynamic of vendor risk management. You have cybersecurity accountability, where some of the North American regulators, including the Federal Reserve and OCC, are expected to enhance cybersecurity regulations, increasing the accountability of financial institutions for their vendors' cyber hygiene, you can say. Financial institutions may face more severe penalties if they fail to ensure their vendors meet these standards. And you have a greater emphasis on ESG as well. As ESG regulations continue to tighten, financial institutions will be required to evaluate their vendors not only on traditional risk factors, but also on their environmental and social practices. And this will create a new need for new metrics and monitoring capabilities within TPRM programs.
Yeah. I think that's that last bit that you just hit there on the metrics is so key too, is being able to track that, see where it's going, look for trends, and have that oversight there. So, well, fantastic. All right. So as we wrap up, we're coming to an end here today, Michael, and we want to have a little bit of a strategies for success. So, thinking about third-party risk management, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to start, and then I'm going to ask you, and then we're going to ask our listeners, what is the biggest third-party risk management failure you've seen at an organization? And you can anonymize it. And what is your advice to avoid something like that? And I think for me, I was actually in my risk manager role who oversaw a third-party risk. And this is when SolarWinds happened. And so I remember very specifically, getting a Slack from my director of like, hey, what of our vendors, who of our vendors use SolarWinds? So, are we impacted? Like what's that downstream effect? And I had this like panic moment of I cannot answer that question. And I think that was a huge failure on our team's part of looking at that stuff, of looking at that downstream. And admittedly, back then, maybe we didn't think that anymore, but that is something that I felt like was a failure. It was a gap on our point and something we could, learn from and then fill. So I think my advice to folks is making sure that your third party risk management isn't tied to third parties. We're considering the downstream effect, sub processors that they use, and that full impact to the organization. Michael, what about you? What do you think the biggest third party risk management failure you've seen is?
I'll comment on yours first, then
Yes,
mine.
please.
I was teaching one of my workshops in New York City, not last month, I guess it's 2 months now. It was August. We're in October now. So, and in the workshop, one of the attendees said that they did not use SolarWinds, but they were significantly impacted and brought down because one of their critical third parties used SolarWinds.
Yes. I've seen that. Yeah. And that's exactly it. It's like you have to have that oversight and because,
Oh,
you might
no, it
depend
wasn't
on a
SolarWinds.
company.
I'm
Yeah.
sorry. The
Oh.
CloudStrike. For them,
Oh,
it was CloudStrike.
yes. 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 Oh,
Yes.
yeah, exactly. And that was the same thing, right? So hopefully if you were impacted by SolarWinds, you were slightly more prepared for CrowdStrike. That's the fingers crossed. So
My biggest failure that I've seen was not listening to my advice. So, in February 2020, I did my third-party risk workshop in a major city. I don't want to try to note give any indication who this was. And This is right before COVID, and worked on this organization's RFP, massive, large global organization, and 50,000 vendors, suppliers, 18 different risk categories. I told them not to choose a vendor. I said that vendor cannot support 50,000 suppliers across 18 different risk categories. The other analyst firms ranked that vendor very highly and recommended them. They listened to them, not me. They came back 18 months, 2 years later, and said, "We wish we would have listened to you." It's completely fallen apart. People lost their jobs for it. The whole program moved from corporate compliance to the procurement team, and we're just finishing the second round of their RFP now, as it's down to the final two.
Such an important role in and needing that oversight there of the scalability too, and being able to get what you need there. So, fantastic. That wraps up another insightful episode of GRC and Me. A huge thank you to Michael for sharing his expertise and predictions for the future. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know in the comments, what's the biggest third-party risk management failure you've ever seen at an organization? Stay tuned for our next episode and more deep dives into GRC trends and strategies. Until next time, I'm your host, Megan Manivel. Keep staying ahead of those risks.